This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Go figure, right? Yeah. But you don't need to reach a lot of people in that type of podcasting. You just need to reach the right people.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
There's a lot of repurposing of the content.
Yeah, well, because then they can just reuse it and post it and do all kinds of stuff with it. So there's a good friend of mine who's in New Jersey near me, and he used to do radio, news radio, and, you know, this is such and such reporting for 1010 Wins, you know, whatever. But he does a lot of podcasting now specifically for the transportation industry. So he has this thing called Transportation Radio, and those, I guess they're trade industry associations where they want to put out a piece like once a month or once a week or whatever. So he's doing that stuff now, recording it for them. He's hired by them and runs this thing for two associations, I think.
Exactly. I do think more associations will take advantage of it. And I certainly hope that they do, because it's a great way to generate content and in multiple ways. Because, God, we're all so tired of newsletters and video. I mean, the average podcast listener will listen to 40 minutes of a podcast before shutting it off.
Right.
But our tolerance for video is about 2 minutes.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's it.
I'm not surprised, because we're used to TV. I can't sit with my kids, right? I watch TV and they turn, like, the commercials come on and they turn the channel. What are you doing? The rest of the show's on.
My dad used to do that.
Yeah. You used to do that too? It's like you lose interest as soon as the.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's kind of the same thing, right? When you're in their head, they tend to just absorb it and listen, and maybe they're driving, it can't change the channel.
Well, that's the thing. Podcasting is usually done while somebody's doing something else, commuting and exercising at the top two.
Right.
And 85% of podcasts are listened through earbuds.
Sure.
So you're mobile.
Yeah.
And that's that. So interestingly, in the time here that we've been dealing with the pandemic and everything,
right,
podcast listenership has gone, some of the bigger shows, some like comedy shows and like all of those guys, their listenership, not tremendously, has ticked down a little bit.
Right.
But business podcasts has ticked up a little bit. Okay. And what people are consuming the most of is anything that is pandemic related
or topics that are around
how to lead a mobile workforce, how to homeschool your kids, how to not kill your spouse, you know, those kind of topics. So that's what really has skyrocketed.
Sure. Because we're all stuck at home and we're trying to figure our life out.
Yep. Exactly.
What it's going to be like in the post coronavirus era.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work. And they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests, where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hi, I'm Tina Dietz. I'm the CEO and founder of Twin Flame Studios, where we amplify the voices around the world of leaders, subject matter experts, and trusted brands using audiobooks, podcasting, and vocal leadership. And we're here to make a difference.
Okay, Tina, so thanks for coming on the podcast today. You're missing all the nice weather down in Florida, so you came inside for me. I appreciate that.
Yes, it's true. I usually work outside, so this is a sacrifice.
Yeah, well, the last time we spoke, you were in the backyard, right?
So that's true.
I think it was raining here. So, all right, so, but I appreciate it. I know it took us a while to get on the calendar, and it is the middle of May? This mm-hmm. will probably come out like at the end of the summer, the way it is. Yeah,
whatever works.
I am, yeah.
And you're demand.
It's just busy. It's just, maybe I should do more than one episode a week. I just thought that was too much. People were like unsubscribing and stuff. But maybe we'll talk about that off mic. But I want to talk about your business. I want to talk how you got into it.
Sure.
Started, because I know you do kind of soup to nuts, helping people with producing a podcast and with audiobooks and, you know, other, but it's all voice really, right? I mean, that's your and branding. You said all the marketing and branding that goes along with it, right?
Yeah, so it's an interesting
how you
world.
Got started and how you got to where you are, and then we'll get into what Twin Flames does. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. Where would you like to start?
Good. Where you grew up and how you got started and all this stuff.
I was born in a small town, which is actually true.
Yeah.
I grew up south of Buffalo, New York, in a tiny little town. My parents were entrepreneurs, and I'm an only child. So I grew up with a business as a younger sibling.
Okay.
Which I don't recommend.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, at least it was a younger sibling. Could have been an older sibling. And
well, I wouldn't have known any better if it was older. True. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was kind of steeped in business, like a teabag, as I say, from the age of about 4, I started answering phones and going to trade shows when I was about 7, if not earlier.
What did your parents' business do?
Oh, it was super sexy. They sold wood-burning stoves and fireplaces.
You're kidding.
No.
Okay.
No, we lived upstairs and the business was downstairs, and that house was always warm.
I'm sure.
You know. So there was that. And I never wanted to own a business because I grew up with it and I didn't like how it tied my parents down every weekend and nights and all this other stuff. But what I found is I went out into the world and I became a therapist, and I was working with young people, trying to harness that energy of transition and all of that.
Right.
And I found that I really did not work well with bureaucracy. Yes. I didn't understand it. It didn't make any sense to me.
Like big corporate stuff? That kind
and
of
education.
Stuff?
Because
you're basically dealing with the government.
Yeah, pretty much. And school systems. And and I'm pretty rebellious by nature. So it wasn't a good fit. But I did end up helping a lot of kids, which was the point. Right. And the work I did with the teenagers and the young adults at that point, and then moved into higher education, I helped start a nonprofit that I ran for a bunch of years.
Okay. Still around in the education space?
Still in the education space, working with teenagers. The central idea was, how do you take a good idea and bring it into reality? That was a core idea for these teens. Okay. And we did some really cool stuff with them, just teaching them how to set a goal and make it happen. Simple as that.
Was
it
business education, or was it necessarily?
It was whatever they wanted to do, and they learned the skills through that. It started out as a summer program called the Core Leadership Team, and we brought together kids from the inner city and from the suburbs. There was a lot of kind of cross-cultural, diverse groups.
Kids that would never cross paths if it wasn't.
Never. And they good and. Stuff. They came up with some amazing things. Like, I remember at the end of the first summer, they put together a battle of the bands, even down to having to get the permits from the town and the whole nine yards.
Wow.
And there were 500 people on the lawn buying tickets to this battle of the bands. It was nuts. They raised like $4,000.
Wow.
It was
social
really
entrepreneurship.
Cool. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was way back in the early 2000s.
You know, it's funny what you said. Well, it's true what you said before. I was just talking to somebody before we got on about how, you know, people want to be entrepreneurs and they want this freedom and whatever. But being an entrepreneur takes away your freedom. Like, you better be prepared to work harder, like your parents experienced, right?
It
takes over your life. You're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's just, you know, sometimes you got to find your own balance, but it doesn't find it for you. It's not like you leave work and you just leave your work there.
Definition of an entrepreneur: someone who is willing to work 80 hours a week for themselves, but not 40 for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. 80 would be a slow week.
I hope not.
Yeah. But it's true. It just never, it never stops because you're always thinking about it, even when you're not working and something comes up and you got to deal with all the fires and it's your own baby. So I think that's the irony that a lot of business owners or entrepreneurs, whatever that term means these days,
it's true.
Realize the hard way.
A big time the hard way, particularly if you're coming from a 9-to-5 situation. And after I left higher ed and went back into family business, actually, that's how I found
the stove business.
No, not the stove business. Fortunately, okay. My parents had both set a really great example for me about changing careers in midlife. And check this out. They became yoga teachers.
Okay.
I kid you not. And my dad became a massage therapist. And my mom became a yoga therapist. My mom still owns a successful yoga studio in Western New York. Okay. My dad and I built a virtual institute for advanced massage therapy. And that's where I learned online business. And that's also where I got into voiceover. Okay. I'd grown up with a microphone in my hand and doing theater and all kinds of wonderful things like that. And I put it to use developing products for that company, which still exists.
Right. It's so you can't do massages virtually, but you can train people.
That's correct.
Virtually. Got it.
That's correct. And we actually, I managed to put together a live stream for 110 people before the company Ustream existed.
Yeah.
It was this really weird tech
workaround. Difficult to do, right?
Oh my gosh. It was really hard, but it was a triumph at the time.
Now you click the button on the bottom of the screen here. We go live to Facebook right now.
Piece of cake, right?
When
it's
working.
I had an old webcam set up.
Yeah,
FireWire. It was nuts.
Like built into your laptop and everything like that.
But you
knew that's where we were going, right? You knew eventually phones mm-hmm. would be more video than, because in the old days, I forget when it was. When did they come out with like video phones? But you would have to have one and I would have to have one and they didn't work very well.
It was a network marketing company who used to advertise the video phones so much to bring people in. ACN, that was it.
Right. I remember. Right.
Yeah.
Correct. And I couldn't imagine the days when you have to like put clothes on to answer the phone. I mean,
that's a shame.
Ridiculous. But now everybody is, I'm on like 40 Zoom calls a week, I think now.
Yeah, me too.
Craziness. Yeah. But it's just like a standard. But I guess the internet's built up to the point where this works. The first calls I did on Skype with friends, it was stop and start. It didn't work. I mean, and he's down the street, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. It's come a long way.
A challenge, though, to do.
It was. It was a fun thing to kind of work through. And like I said, that company still exists. But then I ended up stepping off from there into a full-time business coaching practice.
Okay.
I had cut my teeth on a bunch of other side businesses when my kids were born. And I was like, I need to work for myself. I want to have that flexibility, which is a story you'll probably hear from a lot
of course.
Entrepreneurs who are also moms.
Yeah, it doesn't give you freedom necessarily, but it definitely gives you flexibility.
It does.
Right.
It definitely does.
It fits with different lifestyles for sure, mm-hmm. right? Kids.
Super helpful.
So you were starting to do business coaching for small business owners, like to help them to motivate, get started, stay on task, the whole nine yards?
Yeah. Through the massage industry, I started getting a lot of requests for help with other businesses because I had built this one. My father was a savvy businessman, but he didn't know anything about online business. And he's a creative.
But he didn't grow up and it didn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Selling stoves. He's a wonderful salesman. He's a wonderful teacher. But the vision and the goals and the mission and the building and the infrastructure and all of that. So I was a full-time business coach for quite a while, and then I had this what I call my chocolate and peanut butter moment some years later when I was taking some master classes as a hobby, a paid hobby in voice acting, and in audiobooks.
So basically you were taking classes for voice acting.
Yes.
And you kind of fell into reading books, like doing audio.
Well, I took some master classes in audiobooks. I had an agent at the time. I was doing some paid voice acting, mostly commercials and things like that. And I just loved it. It was so much fun, you know?
Yeah.
And when I took that audiobook class, I had this chocolate and peanut butter moment that was like, wait, all of the audiobook industry, because it wasn't just about technique, it was about the industry.
Okay.
This industry is going nuts. It's growing like crazy. People love audiobooks.
Right.
But all the
technology
was
changing. That's why.
Technology was there.
It made
Audible,
it accessible. Right.
Audible and Amazon had become the same company.
Yeah, they bought
by
them,
then.
Yeah. Yep.
They went digital. But all of these clients and colleagues that I had who were in the online business world or, out in a different forms of entrepreneurship. Right. They're all writing books, doing bestseller launches.
Content, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So then I went, why aren't they doing audiobooks?
Right, and that led me down a rabbit hole. Books. They don't want to do it. People don't like to hear their voice.
Well, even if they could, it turns out, you know, my curiosity button got turned down there. I went, why is this happening?
Right.
And I just found out people had no idea. They had no idea how to get it done.
Yeah.
And that kind of led me down the road.
Right, unless you were the president of the United States, you're not going to have an audiobook, right?
Right. Well, for a long time, yeah, you had to have a best-selling, traditionally published book to have an audiobook. Now, no way.
Same with hard publishing, right? You can get things on demand now. You don't need to go to Simon & Schuster to get your book published.
Nope.
It's kind of the same thing, right? Podcasting the same way. I'm sure it started out where you had to be in a studio and do all this stuff. Now, what did I say? For $75, you can start your own podcast. That,
yeah, exactly. You know? Actually, the interesting thing about the origins of podcasting, it was actually more of a transition from guys who were really into music and guys who were really into ham radio. And
that's what came together, those two things.
Yeah. And there was a bunch of that happened. And early days of podcasting, now going back maybe 15 years, maybe a little bit more. Okay. But there's a couple of guys around, like Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting, who's just awesome. Yeah. And he's got some interesting stories about that time period.
You know, it's funny, and I'm sure you know this, but we can tell other people. People think like pod and iPod is like an Apple word that they like invented.
Oh, no.
They don't realize that play on demand is an acronym. And iPhone is, they just put it iPod because that's what they do. You know, they brand it with the I. So it's funny, but everyone's like, well, Apple invented that. I'm like, are you kidding me?
They did not.
Yeah, no. It's an acronym. Some people don't realize that. But now we said it out loud, right? So
now everybody knows.
Now all of my 35 listeners will hear it. I think it's growing, actually. I've interviewed, so you're down in Florida. I've interviewed people in Texas and Cleveland and Vancouver and Australia. And I met this woman, actually, you know what? I'm going to connect you with her. She's a voice coach. She's been a voice coach for 18 years in Singapore.
Neat.
Very nice. She found me, not on podcast guests. She found me through some other way. And some of these people have like their own publicists, and the publicists send me an email. And
yeah, I've gotten those too.
Tina, and Tina's looking to, So she came on and we did like an hour and a half through. It was like the morning there and I guess the night here. And I'll introduce you to her. Her name is Cynthia Zai or something.
That's very cool.
Yeah, she's more of a therapist. She basically works with people to teach them to, you know, they don't have a commanding voice at their corporation or their body language. I don't know, whatever. She works with all these people, voice coaching them. She's done TEDx talks and stuff like that. So, yeah, but that's been interesting.
Love that.
Connected with people. I just spoke to a guy yesterday in London. He's like a Richard Branson type of a guy. Wasn't Richard Branson. That would have been nice, but he's that type of a guy.
Sure.
A lot of entrepreneurship stuff. So that's what's been neat about the whole, you can connect with the world now.
Well, it's one of the beautiful things about podcasting is you end up with these communities, multi-generational across the world. And it's really fascinating to look at your stats and see who's listening in different parts of the world. It's like, really?
I found that unique.
Malaysia? Yeah.
I thought they were all like New Jersey, people I knew, but like around the world. And then I call my friends. I'm like, why the hell aren't you subscribing to my podcast? Yeah. All these people in Michigan are listening. I don't even know who they are. Sign up.
You know, but crack the whip.
Yeah. But they got, you know, they're like, how do we listen to these podcasts? I'm like, you're kidding me, right?
Really?
On your phone. My dad, well, my dad's 76. He's like,
well, that's fair.
My phone.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. It's a little different.
You got to buy him a radio.
Yeah. Just keep tuning it. You'll find me.
You'll find it.
Yeah. I know. Our kids don't even know what tuning is. You don't have to do that anymore. Press a button on your car. Remember those?
The scan
memory
button?
Yeah. You still have the one. Memory and you could. Yeah, you do?
I still have the scan button on my car.
No, I mean, I'm talking like when the radio had, you'd turn it on.
Oh, the actual push buttons.
Remember those buttons? And then
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Those are like the memory programmed. Buttons. Yeah.
Yes. You had your five channels.
Yeah.
Yes, that KISS 98.5, 102.5, Rock FM.
Wouldn't always work. You'd have to push the button again to make it move more. Yeah. Needle. You know, it was not, there was like, it's amazing we had lights in those days.
It is. Well, that was the day when you got the tape deck that auto-flipped the tape for you. Right.
Yeah. Baby. You didn't have to take it out and flip it in your car.
Yeah. Oh, high tech. Yeah.
Well, they don't even know. Our kids don't even know what cassettes are.
I've showed mine just for posterity because it was such an important part of my childhood.
Took him to a museum and looked through the glass and he goes, I mean, are 8-tracks even around anymore? I don't think you can. Maybe you can buy them used.
But you can buy. You can get them used. And there are people who are audiophiles that will have different sets of things. You know, vinyl's made a huge comeback.
Oh, my son got into vinyl. But a lot of them are like special pressings. They're not just general. But yeah, even finding him a turntable was difficult. We had to go to like Sam Ash or one of these, you know, audio
it's the
stores.
Needle.
The needle was more money than the turntable.
Yeah. Yeah, they're precious.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so I'm digressing because we're talking about all audio stuff. But can you, if you had a book, let's say I'm writing a book with somebody, could I record the book, like reading the book, and then there's a way to turn it into an audio book?
So in terms of writing the book and recording it?
No, let's say it's written, and I read it into my mic here, and I record it on Audacity or something like that. Is there a way to upload it and make it into an audio book and sell it?
Yes, there is. The short answer is yes. The long answer is there's more to it than that.
I'm sure. That's why I'm asking the question.
Yeah. So, and I actually was just on another show yesterday, and what she wanted me to talk about was, what are all the mistakes people make recording their own audiobook? I'm like, we're going to need longer than 20 minutes.
It was only 20 minutes?
Yeah. So that's it was like funny. A 20 to 30 minute interview. And I'm like, we're going to, and by the end, people are going to be like, oh my God, I never want to see another audiobook. This is not good.
Right. That's good because they need people like you.
Well, and this is the thing. Can you do it on your own? Yes, absolutely. 100%.
Right.
And it's hard. It's just, it's just flat out hard to do on your own. It's because you're actually operating technology, reading and speaking at the same time. You're using three very different parts of your brain.
Right.
All at one time.
Yeah.
And it becomes a little nightmarish to do it that way because it's really not a matter of sitting down in front of a mic and just reading your book.
Right. Why do you think I don't script my podcasts? I made it into interviews because it's too stressful for me. I'd rather just talk to you and hear your story and be interested in it.
Well, and you're really natural on the mic. So
but then what do you hold up the script to the screen. So I don't know.
Well, what most professional narrators do is they have a workstation and they use an annotation app where they upload the Word document or the PDF of the book, and then they mark it up with a kind of a shorthand about, breathing and performance, or if it's a fiction book, God forbid, they highlight
the
different characters.
They're turning into like a screenplay almost, right?
Yeah, you really have to mark things up in order to, help keep track of things. And then you got to think about things like if you're doing voices, what are those voices? Are they natural enough to you that you can sustain them? And can you do the same voice
Cause it can
on page 10 that you do on page 80?
Yeah. Well, that's where professionals come in. And are they using kind of like an iPad with a teleprompter so the thing goes through, or are they just using pages?
Because no, you
hear the pages? Or no, I guess the mic won't pick it up if it's a good mic. Right?
No, because you're using an app. You're using it like an iPad.
Got it.
Or something like that. So that's where all the rustling went away. But that's how it used to get done. And basically, the editors would have to take out the rustling of the pages,
right.
Which is, and so that's the other part. The editing of audiobooks is definitely more complicated than the editing of most podcasts. I'm not talking about narrative style journalistic NPR podcast. That's another animal.
Right.
Totally 40, 50 hours of editing per podcast.
Yeah, right. I know. Craziness.
No, but from doing your, working with your show that, you can clean things up and you can.
Yeah. I've gotten to the point where I have the little parts and I just stick them in and do what I want to and I'm done.
Exactly. So, and maybe some filters, maybe, make sure you're normalizing it. A few things to make sure. Okay.
I do normalize some things and I have a couple of websites that I put things into that I've been taught that clean things up and raise the
exactly.
It took a lot of learning.
Yeah. There's a lot of good services like that out there. And for podcasts, that's perfect. But with audiobooks, you can't automate all that. It has to be done by hand. There are very, very specific checklist items that have to be met. Things like noise floor and megahertz and bit rates and
stuff
all kinds
that
of
they
stuff.
Need.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I don't know. That's like talking Japanese to me. I told you, I've worked with some of these sound people at like a podcast meetup and they're like, your podcast, it peaks at this thing and all these things happen and I can help you with that. I'm like, okay. So after they explain it to me, I'm like, it's like I'm deaf and your lips are moving and I don't hear anything.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you're talking about.
I I'm not an audiophile. Like, I'm an entrepreneur. I am really, really good at working with our clients and everything, but I do have, audio engineers who handle the really detailed work on this because they know more than I do. And every
so
often
you've been around it. So
yeah.
You're not even around it.
Yeah. So you get used to the lingo and things like that. But even like my editor, my directors, Paul, he'll go into it and I'm like, stop. Just bottom line it for me.
Right. Yeah. Like what
just
is
it? Bottom line it for me.
Tell me what button yeah. I have to press.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that simple. If you send it back, we could do this. And I'm like, I can't. You know, and then yeah. I'm spending $1,000 an episode to clean these things up.
No, exactly. And that's why the setup is so important.
Yeah.
Doing it from the beginning is so important. And we've had to turn people away for publishing because they did their files on their own and we get the files and they're not in the right format. And there's only so much you can do in post-production to clean things up. There's certain things you can't change after the fact.
Yeah.
Without making people either sound like a robot or it just won't be accepted by Audible or the other platforms. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. So with all this podcasting I do, obviously I go in these meetup groups. If you ever want to find virtual meetup groups, I know all of them. Like I can program you 24 hours a day. So I go up and then I use the mic because it sounds better. They're like, oh, you got a very fancy mic. Mm-hmm. Well, I do podcasting, whatever. So I've been asked now to speak to groups about podcasting. And I'm like, you know, I'm an attorney, right? I just do this. Oh, no, but you know what you're talking about. I have a feeling that after I'm done presenting to these people, you're going to be getting a lot of referrals because they're going to be like, oh my God, I'm not doing this myself. Like it took me a year to learn this stuff.
Happy to have
that. I'm not good at it. Yeah. I mean, look, if you want to use that, because it's just like writing an article. I mean, it's content. It's a way to produce content, way to get your message out there, get followers or whatever. So, but I think that for the average person who is busy with what they do, they don't want to become experts at what you do.
That's right.
Which is obviously why you have a good service. So,
well, thank you, Mitch. I appreciate that. But, you know, it's all relative to the room you're in, right? Like you know 100% more about podcasting than the rest of that room does.
Yeah, right. So I'm confident that I can tell them what equipment they need to buy and all
exactly.
the money they spend. And then after it turns out like crap, you can call my friend Tina down in Florida. She'll get you back on your road and you can spend some money, but have a good podcast.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we do mostly work with brands and established business owners and things like that, because time is super precious. And you know, most of the type of podcasting we do is podcasting for a business, which is different than podcasting as a business.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You don't represent generally one person who's got a message. They want to do a political podcast and, you know, right. It's more of a company that's looking to promote whatever it is they do.
Yeah. It's part of a wider platform and a wider branding situation. And they're looking to become authorities in their industry. They're looking to share their content, educate an audience, generate a wider audience, and certainly network. It's a networking tool.
So it's part of a bigger brand strategy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's usually that's not strategy we've set up. It's strategy they've set up, but now we're dovetailing with that and making sure that everything is, you know, consistent. And also about making sure that, you know, the podcasts aren't commercials. They're not, you know, an infomercial or, you know, you know, it's more along the lines of what we would call edutainment.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because it's a little bit more intimate than like a newsletter.
Totally.
It's certainly more intimate than a 3-minute video. Mm-hmm. So you're talking like maybe companies that are in industries where they produce content for that industry, maybe is that what it is? Like an association, for example?
Well, associations actually don't make use of podcasting the way that I would love for them to. There's a lot of opportunities for associations to get their information out through a podcast. They haven't quite caught on to that yet because associations kind of infamously don't like to spend a lot of money on their content generation. And podcasts, you know, have a quality one. It does cost to produce. We work a lot with independently owned companies, corporations, and entrepreneurs who have really well-established businesses and kind of bring things on. So for example, Independence Advisors, fantastic advisory body. They're, you know, their fiduciary body and
financial advisors.
Yeah. Okay. And do we have to do things with the disclaimers and making sure compliance and all of that?
Yeah.
We do all of that. But, you know, we just launched a show for them called The Wealthcast, you know, and another really specialty tax service up in Chicago is a company called Trimerit. They have a show called The Unique CPA.
Okay.
And you have never seen such an excited group of public accountants in your life. It's awesome. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, and it probably isn't a thing. Yeah. It's the only part of the country where
it's so cool. Yeah. But no, they have guests from all over the country, all over the world, who are doing actually really innovative things in the world of public accounting. But this company is a niche company. They work with a lot of tech companies and similar companies like that to find them R&D tax credits. Very niche.
Oh, right. Yeah.
They're doing
great. I
met
two people in the last 3 months that both work in that industry. I never knew it existed. That's weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Go figure. Right. Yeah. But you don't need to reach a lot of people in that type of podcasting. You just need to reach the right people.
Right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. There's
and
a guy
then they do
I know
a lot of repurposing of the content.
Yeah. Well, because then they can just reuse it and post it and do all kinds of stuff with it. So there's a good friend of mine who's in New Jersey near me. And he used to do radio, like, news radio. And, you know, this is such and such reporting for 1010 Wins, you know, whatever. But he does a lot of podcasting now for specifically for the transportation industry. So he has this thing called Transportation Radio. And I guess they're trade industry associations where they want to put out a piece like once a month or once a week or whatever. So he's doing that stuff now, recording it for them. He's hired by them and runs this thing for two associations, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I do think more associations will take advantage of it. And I certainly hope that they do because it's a great way to generate content and in multiple ways. Because, God, we're all so tired of newsletters and video. I mean, the average podcast listener will listen to 40 minutes of a podcast before shutting it off.
Right.
But our tolerance for video is about 2 minutes.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's it.
I'm not surprised because we're used to TV. I can't sit with my kids, right? I watch TV. And they turn, like, the commercials come on, and they turn the channel. What are you doing? The rest of the show's on. Yeah? You used to do that, too? It's like you lose interest as soon as the
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's kind of the same thing, right? When you're in their head, they tend to just absorb it and listen, and maybe they're driving. They can't change the channel.
Well, that's the thing. Podcasting is usually done while somebody's doing something else, commuting and exercising at the top, too.
Right.
And 85% of podcasts are listened through earbuds.
Sure.
So you're mobile.
Yeah.
And that's that. So interestingly, in the time here that we've been dealing with the pandemic and everything, podcast listenership has gone, some of the bigger shows, some like comedy shows and like all of those guys, their listenership, not tremendously, has ticked down a little bit.
Right.
But business podcast has ticked up a little bit. And what people are consuming the most of is anything that is pandemic related
topics
that are around that, around how to lead a mobile workforce, how to homeschool your kids, how to not kill your spouse, you know, those kind of topics. So that's what really has skyrocketed.
Sure. Because we're all stuck at home and we're trying to figure our life out.
Yep. Exactly.
That's what it's going to be like in the post coronavirus era.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, exactly.
We shall see.
Exactly. So, okay, so you were talking about audiobooks though, right?
We started talking about audiobooks and we veered into podcasting.
That's fun, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you want to go back to audiobooks because we were talking about...
Well, what do you want to know?
I don't know. I'm writing a book. I'd like to make it into an audiobook, but I'm not sure if I'm going to do that or not.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I get that a lot about should I narrate my own book or should I have somebody do it for me? And
like, I'm not writing Shoe Dog like I'm Phil Knight, you know, from Nike. So who's going to download my book? I mean, you know.
Well, I think you'd be surprised. What's your book about?
It's about it's titled like something like 10 Ways to Get Sued by Everyone Everywhere. Like, this is all about the things that you shouldn't do as a business owner because you're going to get sued.
Well, actually, it's pretty interesting. So, about how long of a book is it going to be? Do you have any idea?
It's going to be like an ebook. It's going to be 10, you know, 20 pages. Not very long.
Okay. So
it may not lend itself to audio.
So, the interesting thing about that, there's some interesting schools of thought on a short book like that because, you know, audiobooks are priced by length.
Makes sense.
So unlike your Kindle or your hard copy, soft copy, where you can choose your price when you self-publish, audiobooks are, you can't choose a price.
Makes sense.
You can suggest a price.
Okay.
But each platform is going to base it on their own pricing system. And so a short book like that, as you can imagine, is going to be priced at like $2.99 or something like that. But if you're using it as a promotional tool,
right.
which is what most nonfiction books are used these days, you know, they're used to educate an audience, just like a podcast.
Right.
And also it's a stamp of credibility, just like a podcast, right?
Right.
But the nice thing about doing audio with those is that you do, first of all, if you're going to actually publish it, go through the actual publishing process with an ebook like that, you will have the search engine of Amazon behind you.
Right.
Which is helpful, can be helpful. And you also, again, there's a credibility factor to being not just, hey, download my ebook, but actually go to Amazon, even if you offer it on Amazon for free. I have a client, one of the first audiobooks we ever produced, and her book is actually a couple hundred pages long. It's a fantastic book called Mass Influence, and she is an expert in how to generate influence.
Okay.
Well, the Kindle version of that book has been free for about 5 years now. She's just left it free because it's the top of her conversation funnel with anybody who's interested in influence. And it's been her biggest lead generator.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't cost anything, right?
No, but she makes money on the audiobook.
Right.
Because you don't offer audiobooks for free for the most part, unless they're, I mean, we can get into gift codes and marketing. And
right, of course.
Audible has something called a bounty program, which rewards people for finding them new clients through the downloads of your book. And there's a whole world of that.
It's like the Amazon affiliate program kind of, right?
Similar, that's similar. It's a little more, it's a same, but different, as we would say.
The same concept.
Same kind of concept, except it's a lot more money than the affiliate program offers you.
Got it.
And has, you know, more rules around it. Right. Basically, people download your book for free, but if they stay an Audible customer for 2 months or longer, because it's a membership-based program, you get a $75 check for finding them a new customer.
Right. Finder's
fee. So, finder's fee.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is kind of nice.
Yeah,
and that's all done digitally.
Doing it on a podcast. Like, I could literally record the thing and do it on a podcast episode, but that's not the same as doing an ebook.
No, it's not the same. So, you know, for one that's short, it might, because you're already a podcaster, you got the equipment, you know, probably have to change your room setup a little bit. If you're in a big room, that's not good for audiobooks.
Right.
But that's all. And then, you know, what my company would do is we would come in remote in basically to your setting, make sure that your setup is good enough for audiobooks. Occasionally you're walking around the house a little bit with your microphone and your laptop testing out.
I don't do
spaces.
That, but yeah. Oh, you have to find out where.
Yeah, to find the good space. Usually walk-in closets are really good.
Right.
Small spaces. We can also, you know, recommend a mic surround that can help buffer that noise. And then one of our directors actually just does the recording for you, and all you have to do is sit there and really focus on delivering the content.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSite. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSite and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
Okay. Well, we can focus on it when I get the book done. So
well, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
But that's another way to do it would be to just do it as kind of a read-along series as a podcast.
Yeah,
do
that's
it
true.
As,
I can
do it
turn
as excerpts.
It into a, like a series.
Yeah.
Like a four-part series or whatever.
Yeah. And, or it could even be a segment on this show, you know?
Right.
And stay tuned for story time with Mitch.
Oh, like a little commercial.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You got all kinds of great ideas. So when you do an audiobook, you're working with authors that come to you and say, hey, listen, I wrote this book. Mm-hmm. I want to turn it into an audiobook. Are they writing the book? You don't help them with the writing of the book.
No, although I do have a lot of people that I can refer people to.
And editors.
Yeah, editors, ghostwriters, fantastic people, fantastic publishers that I work with as well. We have a lot of partnerships. And so usually they're one or two places. They're in the midst of writing the book. They've usually already done the first draft and it's in editing.
Okay.
They have questions about the audiobook, or they have previously published the book and they want to do an audiobook as an add-on. Either the launch went really well and they definitely want an audiobook, or the launch went not so great. And they're like, well, let me use an audiobook to, knowing what I know now, kind of relaunch the book.
Okay.
Which is helpful in many cases. So we look at audiobooks both as a product and as an asset for a business, because it's got to fit in with your overall strategy of what you want to accomplish. You can't just be like, hey, that's my audiobook.
Right.
And that's really important to think about, because we specifically work with nonfiction authors. We don't work with fiction authors. It's a different animal.
Yeah. And I think that in the nonfiction world, I'm seeing things that the audio version is got more things to it than the book. There's interviews, there's clips, there's, instead of the author just talking about some example, he's able to turn it almost into a kind of a podcast. Malcolm Gladwell's book, the one he came out with, Talk to Strangers. I love all of his books.
I love all of his books.
I like listening to them because I like hearing his voice and he does the whole thing. But his last book, Talking to Strangers, he basically turned it into a giant podcast. I mean, there's clips and audio in there that you can't get in the book, like real people's voices and stuff like that. So it's really, you know,
interesting. Yeah, that we're seeing enhanced audiobooks just kind of come on the scene, and also enhanced ebooks is another thing with the embed video and whatnot.
Yeah,
and those are far more common and coming out in the world of traditional publishing because of the, you know, and those are folks who are New York Times bestsellers. They have large audiences because that type of production does, it requires a larger
obviously
budget.
A lot more post-production.
Lot more post-production.
But it attracts another audience. Yeah.
Yeah. They're so, so cool. Like we're happy to add and let people add additional content or ad lib a little bit or describe things a different way. We can coach them through that. Music is something else that comes up. So it really just depends on what they want. A lot of authors don't want to narrate their own book, and that's fine too. It's not always necessary. About 80% of our authors don't narrate their own books because of the time that it takes, or that they just really don't like the sound of their own voice.
Gotta read the whole book.
If they're established speakers, and that's a different thing, and they want to make sure that their voice is on the book, then great.
Right. Well, it's part of their craft, right?
Right.
I read or listened to, I don't read anymore. I listened to Trevor Noah's book
about his story. That was fantastic.
Yeah,
that
because
was
he does all the voices audiobook. And he's great with accents and
That was great.
He did a great job with that. But
one of my favorite
his
audiobooks.
Voice is his whole, I mean, also his face, but you know, audio is his whole life. He talks, he's on the TV every night and you hear his voice. And yeah, that was a great book. And somebody who recommended it to me told me, don't buy the book, listen to the audio version.
I only listen to the audio book. Yeah. But again, you have to remember, he's traditionally published. He's going into a New York City recording studio with a director and with a sound engineer.
Yeah.
And they're spending a week in the studio together, recording, re-recording, doing, you know, the performance of it, you know, the whole nine yards.
He doesn't just one take in his kitchen and then send it in.
No, God. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus it's a long book. You could tell people's voices change a little bit. You can't read it all in one sitting. So you want to be consistent. It's hard.
Yeah. You have to be consistent. And also you have to know how long you can speak before vocal fatigue sets in.
Yeah.
And audiobooks are read at a different pace than your speaking pace. We speak way faster than you should be reading an audiobook. makes you have to slow down your audiobook.
The listener has to follow what you're talking about, right?
Like if you watch Trevor Noah's stand-up or watch him on The Daily Show, the cadence of his speech is much faster there than it is when he was doing his audiobook.
Yeah. No, I definitely noticed that. Because you're also watching him, too. So you're absorbing it two ways.
Yes.
I think you need to. Yeah. So what... So. All right. So let's make a shift back to podcasting. Because we talk about like advice that you have for people, and maybe you have some stories about some podcasts you've done and different things like that. But I think that one of the reasons why we connected was to talk about not just the services that you provide, but also the advice that you have for people who may have a podcast they want to improve, or they're trying to get started in podcasting and they don't really know what to do. So I'll leave that.
Well, what do you want to start?
Well, let's start. And since podcasting is my love, why don't we, after my wife and my kids, but I'll put it ahead of the dogs because they make me get up at 6:30 in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'll put it ahead of the dogs because they make me get up at 6:30 in the morning to walk them every day.
That's fair.
But yeah, maybe we could talk about, because I know there's a lot of people out there, and I told you that I do a lot of virtual networking now, all these Zoom meetings. Everyone asks me, oh, you have a podcast. How'd you get started? I want to do that and this and that. So, you know, for all those people out there who don't even know what the heck to do, or they think this is like some expensive mic that I have, which it's not, how do they get started? What's your advice in terms of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, podcasting is it's such a personal thing.
Yeah, not for everybody, right?
You know, no, it's not for everybody, but I think it's a fun medium. So the first thing is, do you listen to podcasts? You know, and maybe experiment with listening to some podcasts to get some ideas about what's out there. Look at the podcast art. Check out the descriptions of the shows. Yeah. A lot of people don't look at the descriptions, but it's something you have to have.
It's searchable content.
Yeah. It's not only is it searchable content, but it's...
You're talking show notes, the show notes below.
No, I'm talking about the description of the show, which is different than the show notes. So you have to have a description that is, a paragraph to several paragraphs long, just sharing about what the show is.
Just a general description of the show.
Yeah, general description of the show.
Directories and things like that.
Absolutely. Because not only is that searchable content, it is also what your positioning is, what your description is, what do you want to be known for?
Right.
And, if somebody's looking at a podcast, of course, they're going to be attracted to the art first. Right. That's usually because we're visual. So don't spend some time on your art. Artwork on a podcast needs to be so readable.
Right.
So unbelievably readable. And the title needs to make sense to people. It can be catchy. It can be weird. It can be cute. You know, it can be very straightforward, but it needs to not be too many words.
Right.
You know, I saw a podcast recently that I had to click on it because it was like almost like a circus type of flag or sign. And it was called World of Depression.
That's
and I
funny.
Was like, what is that? So the more intriguing that you can make. And it was basically people on who were out in the public eye, a lot of comedians, actors, things like that, talking about how their deal with anxiety and depression and how they've worked with it and overcome it. It was actually really fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how I came up with The Accidental Entrepreneur, because first I came across something, not a lot of people know this, but you probably remember there was a movie, I think with William Hurt.
The Accidental Tourist.
Yeah. The Accidental Tourist.
Yes.
And it was like at the time where somehow I saw something about the movie, something old posted somewhere. I don't know what it was. Had nothing to do with what I was doing. But at the time, I was very frustrated with the fact that people that are going into business or starting a business or expanding their business, they're doing it. It's all by accident. Like there's no plans. Very few people have a business plan. You don't need a complicated business plan, but you need to like put something down in writing and, you know, try and figure things out. And then they're not. So then they don't accidentally succeed. That never happens. You accidentally fail.
Sure.
Then you got to start over, and some people just walk away. Most people do, but some people keep going and they fail their way to success. But that's where the name came from. I wanted a catchy name, something unique, but it all kind of just happened one night. Like I was like, accidental tourist, accidental people, accident. The Accidental Entrepreneur. How about that?
I like it. Yeah. And it was one of the things that drew me to your show. Because you and I also met through podcastguest.com, which I had just been experimenting with to see how it is as a resource. And accidentally on purpose. Maybe?
Yeah. No, I mean, look, that's good advice for people. If you want to get into podcasting, maybe starting as a guest. and that get your message out is a good way to start, right?
Big point. So what you were saying about the business plan also holds true for podcasting. Okay. You do want to have it, you know, just don't pick up a microphone and start talking into it.
Right.
I get that.
But just don't publish that.
I get that. I can't. Somebody hands me a microphone, I'm going to take it. It's just how I am. But nonetheless, if you're going to launch a show, it requires some forethought ahead of time. And podcast guesting is a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic idea.
You know Steve Ulsher? He's the guy who published Podcast Magazine.
Yes, I do know Steve.
So he agreed to come on my podcast. We did an episode, I don't know, last week sometime. But he is a great way to start to learn about how to promote what you do through podcasting, not your own podcast. He advocates being a guest and how to find guest opportunities.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of, you know, I have a guide, just a PDF download. That's basically how to be a guest on more podcasts. And it's got all the best practices and things like that in it. So if anyone wants that.
Put a link in the show notes.
And, yeah. You can put a link to it in the show
absolutely,
notes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
And that,
So that's good. So people should plan things out better. They should come up with something that's somewhat, I think they also maybe should do research and make sure that what they're doing is not out there already. Right.
Well, yes and no. Yeah. There are so many, interview shows, right? There's a gazillion interview shows.
Right.
But how are they getting done? And please, 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 folks out there, if you're listening, please don't do an interview show where you ask the guest for a list of questions and then just read off those questions.
You know, I have to say that I've done a couple of those where I went on as a guest and they sent me these questions and I didn't take it seriously. I figured those are like suggestions. Like, what are we? Yeah. And the guy literally like
just read him off.
Yeah. And he was I could tell he was very nervous. And, you know, and he'd be like looking at the screen. Now, nobody could see this because we're on Zoom together. But
looking at this next question.
And then he'd be getting back to the, and he'd ask me these questions.
Wow.
And the first thing that went through my head was, oh my God, he was serious about that. Like I didn't prepare answers for the questions.
Yeah.
So I'd have to answer them on the fly, but it's not only unnatural, but I think the person listening, they're like, ugh. Like, you know, well,
there was a lot of shows that started like that. I mean, John Lee Dumas with Entrepreneur on Fire. That was kind of the standard. And John was such a phenomenon.
Yeah.
He was one of my early podcast mentors.
Somebody mentioned him to me the other day. John Lee Dumas, right?
Very, very successful man. Helped a lot of people with podcasting getting started. But the type of he's moved on from podcasting at this stage. He's one of these entrepreneurs that's really good at seeing an opportunity and jumping in on it. Steve Ulsher is good like that too.
Okay.
And so am I actually, but it's just say it.
Yeah.
But they've have, you know, it changes. The industry changes over time. Like, you know, iTunes New and Noteworthy used to be a huge thing.
Right.
It's not a huge thing anymore. iTunes doesn't do it the same way anymore.
Right. Different algorithm. It's a huge platform.
Oh God, it's enormous. I mean, it used to be 10 podcasts a day would get submitted. Now it's 200 podcasts a day get submitted.
That's it? It's only 200? I would think it might be more now.
So, yeah.
No, it can't be 200,000.
Can't be that
it's
many.
Only a million podcasts, yeah. But it's getting crazy. So you don't get approved. You don't get recognized. It takes a while to hear back from them. They make it so you got to do certain things to get up in the directory, by the way. Another education.
Getting
published, getting listed is ridiculous.
Yeah, there's all the different channels, like you know to go through to register your podcast with different outlets so that you can be on an iPhone and an Android and Spotify, and then you want to get an iHeartRadio, but you got to wait 6 months before you do that after you've had this many shows.
Yeah, Spotify was like that. You needed 5 episodes, I think.
You do on Spotify. I think it's 3 now maybe 5, but it changes. That's the other thing. Pandora, actually, you can submit podcasts to, but nobody knows that.
Oh, you can?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know iHeartRadio you could. Somebody told me I'd submit it. I'm on iHeartRadio now, but it took a while.
Yeah, it takes a while. That one, that type of approval takes a while. You have to have 6 months of content.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I did. So then there was a time where if you numbered your podcast, like 1, 2, 3, like iTunes was kicking it out or something. And then they changed that because they realized that people are doing it and you shouldn't. There was a whole thing, an article like from iTunes that said, from Apple, do not number your episodes because it won't be listed or something weird in the directory.
I remember that. There was a period of time when they did that and then they backpedaled on it because everyone was doing it. I used to hate it when people did that because there's only so much on a screen, there's only so much room for people to see a title.
Right.
and you're going to take up that space with 003 episode 00. I'm like, stop it. Just give the title. If you want to put on an episode to a number, put it at the end.
Yeah, that's a good idea. It's that's good advice.
At the end.
Well, I mean, if you're Joe Rogan or Mark Maron, and it's just like WTF and they're listing, you know, Charlize Theron. It's not a very long title. You don't have to say anything. So he numbers his episodes. But
well, remember though, they're kind of OG podcasters.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they started with something and they're going to follow through with that. But every single podcast platform is going to number the episodes anyway.
Right.
For you. So it's not a list. You don't have to make a list. It's fine.
Yeah. I don't. I guess if you scroll down the list, you'll know which is the first one.
Pretty much.
And it's dated anyway.
Well, and most podcasts aren't sequential.
Right.
You know, you jump in the middle, you jump in wherever, and it's still going to make sense to you. It's not like chapters in a book.
No,
unless it's a true crime podcast or something like that.
Yeah, Ronan Farrow, Catch and Kill podcast.
Oh, yeah. Like
that was good. Did you listen to that one?
No, I don't listen to true crime. It's not my thing, but
no,
oh my God, it's so popular.
He wrote a book called Catch and Kill. It's about the Harvey Weinstein thing, the whole, he's the one who broke that story. So he made a podcast.
Oh, that makes sense.
Go with it. It's like 7 episodes or 10 episodes, something like that. That talks.
See, that's
about
smart.
The book. Yeah.
Yeah, that's called a limited series, and that's something that on the business side of things that I can recommend as well. It's a low risk way to get into podcasting. Like, plan a podcast that is 8, 10, 12 episodes long. Maybe it's case studies, or you know, maybe it is around a central theme or around you know, a very specific topic. And just flesh that out and just publish that in an on its own, you know, get your feet wet in the podcasting world. Once you do one show, you can do more. It's pretty addictive, actually.
Yeah. So that may be a good option instead of doing an audio. If you have a book or you have a blog, you can do a series that kind of goes with it. You know who did that? Remember that show? Did you ever see, what was that called? McBillions?
No.
Okay. So you'll love this. So I think it's Netflix did this, you know, they do these expose shows, right?
Yeah,
like Dirty Money and things like that. So they're back in the '80s. Remember when McDonald's had the Monopoly game where you could go
buy a shake pieces.
There was instant prizes too. Like you could win a car, you could win $1 million, whatever. So back in the '80s, when this was going on, there was a period of time where the game was completely fixed. And
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. And there was this call that went into one of the FBI offices down in Florida for some reason. And this new agent, they're like, listen, work on this product. Like, they're finding him stuff to do. And he sees this sticky about the, with a question mark, McDonald's Monopoly game. And the guy's like, well, what is that? He goes, I don't know. I got some call from some woman who says that the Monopoly game is fixed with, but I there's nothing going on. He goes, oh, can I work on that? So he takes the thing and discovers, and it's like 7 episodes or something like that on Netflix. And they issued a podcast that went into more depth of the interviews and things they couldn't put into each of the video episodes, because they were TV shows that were whatever, 45 minutes each or something like that. And it is all about how the FBI broke this story, started working with McDonald's behind the scenes, and they eventually find out who's doing it internally, and the mob was involved, and they're selling this stuff.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And they discovered that these people around the country, they were all spread around, but there was a consistent group of people that kept winning the big prizes, the instant money, the cars, and now the game's not fixed anymore, but this was like for a period of like 6 years where people were stealing from McDonald's millions of dollars for this thing.
Just,
McBillions. You should look at it. You've got a lot of time now. You need
My God.
You need binge watching. That's a good
Jenny,
one.
Jenny, Jimmy the Fish is here for a shake. Make sure you give him the right one.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And that's the Hamburglar. Like, that was the least of their problems. Remember that? Yeah. So you should watch it. It's a really good one. But if you want to listen to a good podcast, that's McBillions.
See, that's another good example too. Not only is a limited series, but they also piggyback the material. So again, I can translate that to business.
Right.
If you have a video series that is short, and they're 2, 3, 4 minutes long, well, then you can do things that are more in depth by using a podcast to pair with that, or you've got a blog series or something, and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of things you could do to kind
be
of
creative,
pair
right?
a podcast and give people multiple ways to to use content that you have. You know,
who does that? Willie Geist on Today. Mm-hmm. So he does the Sunday sit down or something. It's on Sundays. And, you know, TV's not going to give you an hour. So it's like 6-8 minutes. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it is 2 hours with David Letterman, you know, all kinds of very famous people.
Yeah.
And he puts the whole thing on a podcast. So if you want more content and you're craving for this stuff and you love whoever he's talking to, you can go on the podcast and listen to the entire interview.
Entire
the 2 hours they spent together at, you know, David Letterman's house watching Brook Trout jump in the background. And it's interesting because you really get to know the person as opposed to a really quick thing on TV.
Very true.
That's good. Good advice as to where to start. Who's trying to reach me? Nobody that I care about. Okay. So that's good. So people listening, because I think the whole thing getting started is overwhelming to a lot of people. Like even writing a book is overwhelming, but that's become less.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things. So there are like, you know, steps you can take. The first thing, definitely go look at podcasts. See about getting yourself on a guest on some shows. If you have colleagues, play the Who Do You Know game with them. Hey, guys, have you ever been on a podcast? Can you introduce me to somebody?
Right.
That's usually the easiest way to get on a show. Podcastguest.com would be another one.
Radio that's a good one, right?
Radioguestlist.com is another one.
And you really don't want to do it through the mic like in your laptop, right? So are there some mics that you like that are not too expensive? And it would be a USB mic. They don't need to get a mixing board like
nope,
I have.
No, right? Mixer, no mixer, no mixer, yeah. No mixer. Yeah, that's advanced. But I'm actually not. We're using a standalone mic right now. I'm using a headset that, if you're particularly for being a guest, we're using a USB headset is going to be okay. If it's it's a decent one from Logitech, Plantronic, the one I'm using, I really love is from Sennheiser, which is a very reputable microphone company.
Yeah.
You're talking about $35, $39, $50 bucks, no maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't use an earbud with the little thing that has a mic in it.
Don't use an earbud with the little thing. However, again, if you're a guest, you may be able to get away with using specifically AirPods.
Okay.
But that's only if you're going in through Zoom on the Zoom app. Don't dial in on the phone.
Okay.
It changes the voice. It changes the quality completely. Not my favorite option.
So we're AirPods, AirBuds, or whatever they're called now. There's a microphone built into those?
There's a microphone built into them and it's pretty decent, but we try to avoid that and try to definitely only for if you're a guest and only if you don't have other stuff. And then, Audio Technica, also known as ATR, makes a microphone called the 2020 or this anything in that line. That's an ATR 2020.
This is an XLR. Yeah. So you could get an XLR. You just need to get one of the cables that goes.
Yeah, it's just a converter.
XLR to USB,
XLR to USB, it's called. One of my other favorite mics is specifically the Blue Yeti X. It's the newest version of the Yeti. The Yeti's kind of an infamous microphone.
Right.
I've been using the old version for years and years and never had an issue with it.
Yeah, not too expensive either.
No, they're about $100.
Yeah.
They're very sensitive. The older versions are very sensitive, so they get a lot of what's called room noise and echo. And that's one of the nice things about the Audio Technica is it's more noise canceling.
Right, right. Yeah, I really have to talk into the mic for you to hear it.
Yes.
My son makes noise in the other room. You don't hear it.
Exactly. So it's probably a better option than but the Blue Yeti X is what we have all of anyone who wants to narrate their own book, that's the microphone we have them get.
Those are fun too, because you can pick a color. They come in colors, so you can pick.
They come in colors? I didn't realize that. I've only ever seen them in one color.
Like blue and red and white and black. Yeah, they come in all kinds of colors.
The Blue Yeti X does?
Maybe it doesn't because it's new, but the original Blue Yeti comes in a lot of
colors. Well, I've had a boring silver one for 10 years.
Who knew? That was probably the first, one.
Again, like OG microphones, right?
Right. It's funny because when I talk to the professional world of which you're a part of, the professional podcasters, whenever somebody's coming on who does regular podcast guesting, even if they don't have a podcast, they always have a good mic so we get good sound.
Rode is another good company, but that's a little more expensive.
Okay.
Yeah, things like that. But there's a lot of good
what is that called? The Rodecaster or something?
The Rodecaster, yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you really gain a lot because it's just podcasting by spending $200, $300, $400, $1,000 on a microphone, as opposed to getting something like this that is basically under $100 and you just need the cable and it plugs into your computer.
I would definitely start with $100 or less if you're getting started. And you can always go from there. I mean, is your ears get more sensitive and whatnot? Sure, if you want that, if it's a, right. It depends on what you value. There is good enough,
yeah.
And then there's a little bit of levels up there, but a lot of people aren't going to be able to hear it.
No, unless you're an audiophile type of person, you don't notice those kind of.
Or you're not using good post-production techniques.
Okay. All right. And now if people are recording, well, obviously they can do it through Zoom, right? We know Zoom works. Mm-hmm. And you can do it in separate channels.
Yep. If you're using the desktop version of Zoom.
Yeah. What else in terms of editing, like what software is out there? Like I use Audacity, which is free.
Audacity is one of my favorite software tools. That's okay. Wonderful. There's also some, filters and automated tools out there that you can use. We don't do any of that in-house. Right. All my guys are using, Adobe or
Adobe SoundForge is that the sound?
They have their own setups, but Adobe Audition, SoundForge, those kinds of things. But there's lots of tools out there. If you go into pretty much any Facebook forum that is dedicated towards podcasting, there's also a lot of free courses out there on getting started with podcasting.
Right. What's his name on YouTube? Pat
Flynn.
Yes, Pat Flynn. Right. He does a ton.
Yeah, I listened
of
to his show for years when he was first doing it. Yeah, Pat has a ton of resources and he doesn't he's not a podcasting studio, but he's extremely successful podcaster. He's been in a lot of businesses and is a really cool entrepreneur. So yeah, he's a good resource for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also a guy called the Shan Man. I forget what
his
name is.
Shan Man. Oh wow.
I don't remember. It's John Shanahan or something like that. So he just calls himself, but he's a big radio guy and he does a lot of podcasts. You can get on his list to get his newsletters, just like Pat Flynn and stuff like that. So
Also consider going to one of the, back when, once we're back out and doing events and things like that again, PodFest Multimedia Expo here in Florida is a great show for independent podcasters. That's really geared towards independent podcasting and media.
Yeah. There's one in Vegas, Podcast Movement or something, or
that moves around. Podcast Movement is the big show.
Yeah, that's the big
one. It's a really big show. And that tends to change coasts. They go back and forth. Okay. And then there's smaller shows, the Mid-Atlantic Podcast Festival. There's a traveling kind of show that does a lot of small shows over the country called
Less expensive, outlier, less overwhelming
Outlier Podcast Festival.
Okay.
DC PodFest is another one that's really good. And the same person, Jennifer Crawford, who runs DC PodFest, is also organizing Podcast Inc., which is something I'm involved with, which is all about corporate podcasting and specifically corporate internal podcasting, which is a whole other animal.
So it's going to be like a trade magazine for corporations podcasting?
No, it's about how podcasting is used by corporations. It's a conference.
Got it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a conference.
It's a conference. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a 1-day conference, and we're actually debating right now whether it's going to be live or virtual this
yeah,
fall.
I started getting emails about virtual conferences lately.
Yeah. Yeah.
From
yeah.
Steve Ulsher and from my friend Jeff Bullis down in Australia. They're promoting.
If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is a production of Mitchell C. Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.